administration wants to leave itself as much space as possible to keep the door open for possible dialogue with North Korea.
New U.S.-Korea cooperation. It's Monday, May 24th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, COVID help for Nepal, calls to open Australia, vaccine billionaires, China lands on Mars, life after Vietnam. It's all on today's VOA Asia. COVID-19, climate change, and cooperation in high-tech industries were the focus of a summit between U.S. President Joe Biden and South Korean President Moon Jae-in at the White House late last week. While the leaders also discussed North Korea, prospects for a breakthrough in denuclearization appear dim. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara has a report.
South Korea has vaccinated only 3% of its 52 million residents, but aims to reach herd immunity by November. The United States pledged to help Seoul in the effort through a vaccine partnership announced by President Joe Biden during a summit with South Korean Moon Jae-in at the White House Friday.
So we can scale up global vaccine supplies. We'll strengthen our ability to fight the pandemic and respond to future biological threats.
The leaders also focus on climate change, regional security, and the North Korean nuclear weapons program.
Our two nations also share a willingness to engage diplomatically with the DPRK, to take pragmatic steps that will reduce tensions as we move toward our ultimate goal of denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
Moon dismissed the notion that there is a different sense of urgency, stressing the two countries are aligned on the timeline for denuclearization.
The principle of the negotiation toward North Korea has already been announced by the U.S. government, very calibrate, practical, gradual, step-by-step manner, and very flexible.
But analysts say prospects to halt Kim Jong-un's nuclear ambitions are dim.
There's no momentum. When it comes to North Korea, there is no breakthrough that can be expected.
Moon is eager to cement a legacy as peacemaker before he leaves office next year. But Pyongyang's nuclear weapons and fuel stockpile has advanced, despite personal diplomacy between Trump and the North Korean leader. The Biden administration said it will pursue a calibrated, practical approach with North Korea, but has not provided much detail.
The administration wants to leave itself as much space as possible, both to keep the door open for possible dialogue with North Korea, but also not to be embarrassed in the event that North Korea reverts to provocations.
Biden thanked South Korean companies for investing more than $25 billion in the U.S. and thanked Seoul for its support of his effort to build supply chain resilience. Moon is only the second world leader Biden has hosted since taking office after Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga visit in April, a sign of Washington's focus on Asian allies as it faces a rising China.
The atmospherics is very good between the two countries, so they really want to showcase the strength of the alliance relationship.
Also Friday, Biden awarded the Medal of Honor to retired U.S. Army Colonel Ralph Puckett Jr. for conspicuous gallantry during the Korean War. This is the first time a foreign leader participated in such an event. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News.
Meanwhile, in Myanmar, the head of the military government said that ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi is in good health and would appear in court in the coming days. The junta leader says Suu Kyi is at her home and healthy and will face trial in court in a few days. The junta leader says Suu Kyi is at her home and healthy. The comments came from a May 20th virtual interview with Hong Kong-based broadcaster Phoenix Television, parts of which were released on Saturday. It was the junta leader's first interview since overthrowing Suu Kyi on February 1st. Suu Kyi is facing multiple criminal charges, including the possession of unlicensed walkie-talkies, violating COVID-19 restrictions, breaching telecommunication laws, and incitement to cause public unrest. She has also been accused by the junta of accepting $600,000 in illegal payments. The coup triggered a crisis in the Southeast Asian country that led to deadly anti-junta demonstrations and clashes between several armed ethnic groups and the ruling junta. One such group, the Kachin Independent Army, attacked an army post early Saturday, according to local media reports. A KIA spokesman confirmed the attack with Reuters news agency, but did not give details. Junta leaders have sought to justify their coup by saying the November 8th election won by Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy was fraudulent, an accusation the Electoral Commission rejected. Protesters have been demanding the return of the civilian government that led 10 years of democratic reforms under Suu Kyi's watch. In a campaign to quell the protests, the government has killed more than 800 protesters and bystanders since the takeover. That's according to the Assistance Association for Political Prisoners, which tracks casualties and arrests. There's much more on our website. Visit us at VOA Asia and our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. More than 125 Myanmar teachers suspended for opposing coup. Myanmar junta says deposed leader to appear in court. China's father of hybrid rice dies. His research helped to feed the world. IOC vice president gets backlash, saying Olympics are on no matter virus. In fast-aging China, elder care costs loom large. Expanded coverage of all of these stories and much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also visit us at our website. That's voanews.com. Let's continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The United Nations is appealing for nearly $84 million for assistance to 750,000 people in Nepal who are suffering a devastating COVID-19 surge. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA from Geneva.
Nepal is facing an outbreak of COVID-19 cases and deaths that is as destructive as the surge engulfing giant neighbor India. In many ways, it may be even worse. The United Nations says Nepal has roughly the same number of daily cases per capita as India, but with a much weaker health system incapable of dealing with the crisis. The World Health Organization says Nepal has nearly 500,000 COVID-19 cases, including more than 6,000 deaths. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says the number of cases is escalating rapidly. It says cases have risen from 150 a day in early April to more than 8,000 cases a day since May 5th. OCHA spokesman Jens Laerke says all sectors of Nepalese society are reaching a breaking point.
Millions of people are struggling with the direct health impact of the pandemic, but also hunger, malnutrition, devastating economic losses, and other health needs that are being overlooked. The current outbreak is hitting the poorest and most marginalized people in Nepal the hardest.
The OCHA says the dramatic spike in cases has spurred an unprecedented need for medical supplies, including oxygen, medicine, ventilators, diagnostic kits, and vaccine. It warns the lives of many people who become sickened by the coronavirus will be lost because Nepal lacks the supplies it needs to save them. Laerke says a positive response to the UN's $83.7 million response plan is crucial to avoiding that.
Our plan calls for swift action and international solidarity that is desperately needed to save lives and prevent unnecessary suffering today and in difficult weeks to come. We have no time to lose.
The UN response plan aims to address both the health and humanitarian consequences of COVID-19, helping hundreds of thousands of vulnerable Nepalese with health, food, education, nutrition, shelter, protection, water, and sanitation assistance. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, trying to get back to Australia. Happening now in Asia, news outlet Myanmar Now cites a commissioner saying Myanmar's junta-appointed election commission will dissolve Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy party because of what it said was fraud in a November election. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice, as always, to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us. More than 70,000 people have signed a petition urging the Australian government to ease COVID-19 entry restrictions on foreign-born parents of Australian citizens, who are allowed into the country only on compassionate grounds. Campaigners argue the rules are having a profound impact on family relations and mental health. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Foreign-born parents of Australian citizens aren't considered to be immediate family under the law. They need an exemption on compassionate grounds to be allowed into the country under strict COVID-19 border measures. Campaigners argue that few cases are approved and that the regulations should be changed because families have been separated and children haven't met grandparents. Celia Hammond, a member of the House of Representatives, the lower house of Australia's federal parliament, from the governing Liberal Party, told the House that parents were a key part of an emotional support system for many immigrants and their families. Katerina Dumitriva has tried unsuccessfully to bring her mother back to Australia from Ukraine.
My mum left on the 2nd of March 2020 for what was supposed to be like a 3 to 4 week trip to Ukraine. Nothing was indicative at this time that the borders will be closed forever. So she left and she never returned. And I applied for exemption 5 times and the answer was just not exempt.
The petition has been presented to the Parliament in Canberra and is awaiting a response from the government. Australia's Home Affairs Minister Karen Andrews has up to 90 days to respond. Australia banned most foreign nationals more than a year ago to curb the spread of the coronavirus. Citizens returning from overseas face 14 days in mandatory hotel quarantine, but capacity is limited. The government says it probably won't be safe to reopen international borders until the middle of 2022. Prime Minister Scott Morrison.
It's not one day the borders are open, one day the borders are closed. That's not how it works. There's a sliding sort of scale here, and we're working on the next steps. Now, it's not safe to take those next steps.
Critics, though, say that's far too long to wait and that Australia's isolation isn't sustainable. A recent newspaper poll showed almost three quarters of Australians want to keep international borders closed until at least the middle of next year. Australia has recorded 30,000 coronavirus infections since the pandemic began, and 910 people have died, according to the health department. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia, 21 marathon runners were confirmed dead Sunday after extremely cold weather with hail, freezing rain and gale winds hit the mountain track in the Yellow River Stone Forest tourist site in Bayan City in China's northwestern Gansu province. You'll find this and all the big stories on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, campaigners say that 8 executives and investors in companies making coronavirus vaccines have become billionaires in the last year, thanks to the patents on their inoculations, and are calling for the pharmaceutical firms to share their technology so that global production of vaccines can be quickly increased as infections continue to surge in many poorer nations. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Coronavirus vaccines have transformed the fight against COVID-19, but they have also transformed the personal finances of several individuals involved in their development, according to the People's Vaccine Alliance, a group of non-profits campaigning for equitable global access to vaccines, which includes the charity Oxfam.
The pharmaceutical corporations behind some of the most famous COVID-19 vaccines, like the company Pfizer, for instance, or Moderna, They're making huge profits from the monopoly they have on these vaccines. And as a result, their investors and their CEOs are becoming billionaires for the first time ever.
They include the chief executive officers of US pharmaceutical firm Moderna and the German firm BioNTech, according to analysis by the People's Vaccine Alliance. The alliance claims seven other executives or investors involved with Moderna and the Chinese firm CanSino Biologics have also become billionaires.
These COVID-19 vaccines were funded by public money, by taxpayers like you and I. So these are not the property of these companies, and they should not be used to deliver these enormous profits.
The patents on the vaccines mean the pharmaceutical firms can dictate the price and distribution of the drugs, says Lawson.
Because of these monopolies, we're ending up with an artificial scarcity, and it's quite enough space for these companies to make a decent return, not obscene profits, not creating billionaires, but also at the same time share their technology, share their intellectual property, and allow every competent vaccine manufacturer on earth to be producing the vaccines we need.
In a statement, BioNTech said that it had already increased its production capacity up to 3 billion doses in 2021. The firm added that patents are not the limiting factor to produce the vaccine, which is, in its words, a complex process developed over more than a decade. Moderna did not respond to requests for comment by the time of publication. Poorer countries are facing a dramatic shortfall in the supply of vaccines. The United States this month declared its support for a move to suspend patents on coronavirus vaccines, first suggested by India and South Africa. The issue topped the agenda at a global health summit held by the G20 group of industrialized nations in Rome Friday. In a joint declaration, the G20 called for voluntary licensing and technology transfers, but stopped short of supporting a suspension of vaccine patents. The European Union pledged to give 100 million vaccine doses to poorer nations this year and build vaccine production hubs in Africa. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Making headlines in Asia, scientists in southwestern China detected record-breaking bursts of gamma rays from outer space that may someday help explain how matter is created and distributed across the universe. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a U.S. Space Force defense satellite is launched into space. Plus, China makes it to Mars. And a satellite made of wood is scheduled for launch later this year. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more news from space.
Atlas Ignition 2.
Aboard this rocket sits a defense satellite for the U.S. Space Force. The U.S.-based company United Launch Alliance this week completed the launch after a 24-hour delay caused by the rocket's liquid oxygen system. The satellite is part of the Space-Based Infrared Geosynchronous Satellite Mission, or SeaBIRDS, to serve as an early warning system for missile attacks. The latest launch is the fifth satellite to join the mission. Also this week, NASA launched the Black Brant 12 suborbital rocket. NASA says the mission looks to help scientists learn more about energy and momentum in regions of space that are magnetically connected. Part of that mission is releasing barium vapor into the sky. The agency says the vapor is harmless to the environment and public health. NASA released this still image of the launch, and the next one is scheduled for May 26th. And China this week released these images of a Chinese rover landing on Mars. The mission is one of exploration, and the rover's name is Zhurong after a Chinese god of fire. China joins the United States and the former Soviet Union as the only countries to have landed on Mars, with the U.S. being the only country to successfully do so more than once. Back on Earth, private spaceflight company SpaceX completed its 15th mission this year aboard a Falcon 9 rocket. It launched another 52 satellites as part of its Starlink global broadband network. Astronomers have said the satellites block their view of anything beyond them. SpaceX says the satellites will bring high-speed internet to underserved communities. Finally this week, if all goes according to plan, the atmosphere will soon have in its orbit the most eco-friendly satellite ever. Designers built the WESA WoodSat from plywood and resin to see how it could withstand space. WoodSat's Jari Makinen says the mission is about research.
This satellite is studying the possibilities, and we start studying the behavior of wood in space. It won't be a big business, never, I don't think so, but there will be a niche for these kind of materials as well.
Designers say the satellite could reduce fossil fuel emissions from manufacturing traditional satellites by replacing materials with sustainable wood. It would also reduce the amount of metal space junk orbiting Earth. WoodSat is scheduled for launch later this year. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Vietnamese-American Daniel Ngo doesn't remember much about her escape from Vietnam. She was just 3 years old when she fled Saigon on one of the last American planes to take off before North Vietnamese troops took over the city. Ngo has since dedicated more than 3 decades of her life to the U.S. Army, giving back, she says, to the country that saved her. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has her story.
At 5'2", Colonel Danielle Ngo might not look like it, but she is a force of nature. She's beaten back wildfires, helped capture Saddam Hussein in Iraq, and jumped out of planes.
I always wanted to jump out of perfectly good aircraft, so I always wanted to be a paratrooper.
Ngo has paved the way for Asian Americans as the highest active duty woman of Vietnamese descent in the U.S. Army.
We are proud of what she does.
She currently serves as the executive officer for the Army's Inspector General, Lieutenant General Leslie Smith.
She's the enforcer.
I make things happen behind
make
the scenes.
Make things happen, this right. Really not just for the 200 people that are here, but those additional 1,400 inspectors generals that support commanders out in the field.
Ngo's grandmother, the first woman on the left, worked at the U.S. Embassy in Saigon. So in 1975, when the Vietnam War was ending, Ngo fled to the Saigon airport with her mother and younger sister as the North Vietnamese bombed the city.
The ceiling was crumbling and it was falling down because the airport was under attack.
U.S. personnel rushed her family onto a plane waiting to take off.
It was too heavy and they had to get more people on, so they actually took equipment and threw it off the plane. The Army had rescued us at the end of the war, and so I knew that I wanted to give something back.
So when Ngo turned 17, she wanted to enlist.
I went to my mother and she said, no way. I was 17, I had to get her approval and her signature because I was underage. She's like, no way. She said, I did not take you from a war for you to go back into a war.
Eventually, she convinced her mother to let her join, and she has not looked back, paving the way for other military women.
Females weren't allowed in the combat unit. And I remember begging, please send me to one of the two combat battalions and give me a shot.
The Army gave in as an experiment, she says, and she started jumping out of aircraft with her unit.
Then I found out I was pregnant with my first child. And I was like, oh no, I gotta get into Jet Master School. So I didn't let anybody know that I was pregnant.
She jumped out of aircraft 3 times while pregnant, before admitting it was too risky.
Should never have done that. But it was just the mindset at the time. And that's why I tell my story to other females, because they need to know that some of the things I did, they don't need to do anymore. Because it is, women are so much more accepted now.
Ngo eventually worked her way into a combat engineering post, a mostly male occupation. And after decades of demolitions, Ngo's combat engineering prowess has earned a nod from national engineering organization Discover E.
I'm getting recognized as an engineer, the one branch that I wanted because I thought it was the toughest branch at the time that you could be in for a female. It's pretty nice.
Now, this trailblazer is adding Asian American Engineer of the Year to her lifetime of accomplishments. Carla Babb, VOA News. The Pentagon.
That's all the time we have for today's VOA Asia program. No worries, we'll be back at the same time again tomorrow. And in the meantime, you can find us online. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.